This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
I live right in the middle of the woods. This big thing was 75 feet away from me, smelled awful, devoured a whole deer carcass, and then took off and, like, screamed, screeched, and took off across the street. And I know you guys are going to think I'm crazy, but I'm dead serious. There was something very big, bigger, a lot bigger than me, out here. How long ago did this happen? Immediately. I don't know if animal control, I mean, it is a very large, hairy animal of some kind.
Now, was it standing on two or four?
Well, if I told you it was standing on two legs, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I'm serious. It ran off at breaking limbs and trees, and it kind of screeched, howled. A very creepy, scary thing is, like I said, I live in a tent. We're in the woods, and I just saw this freaky, scary, very large creature devour a deer and run off across the road.
Okay.
I don't know.
Is there any way that we can have an officer contact you?
Yeah, I guess it's this number.
Okay, and do you see signs of a dead deer, blood, whatever?
I'm not going to go check it out right at the moment.
Okay.
Is that okay? Like I said, I thought somebody should know there's a very large something big enough to eat a deer and as a
predator.
Are you seeing
someone there?
Yes, ma'am.
You think you do?
Yes, ma'am.
I lived in the woods for years. I swear to God, I've never seen nothing like this. This is bigger than me.
And it,
I'm 6 feet. It's bigger than me.
It's very large. He carried the carcass off. I mean,
oh, he carried
like,
it
with
okay.
Nothing. Like just.
But I know it picked up that deer and walked with 2 feet.
It's a very large something that smells bad and is bigger than we are. My husband's a very large. Nothing's ever scared him, and, I mean, we both saw it, so.
Okay, all right, we'll have an officer patrol that area.
Strange Harbor, be strange. Another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange, the unsubstantiated, the unconditional.
And Johnny and Billy here, we talk about weird stuff, ghosts, UFOs, Sasquatch, Dogman, conspiracies, near death, afterlife, I don't know, you name it, and we'll talk about it. And in the studio this morning, wait, let me redo that, and in the studio today, our good friend Russell Wiedela. Welcome back to the show, man.
Well, thank you very much, Johnny.
You notice I pronounced your last name right.
I noticed that. That's incredible. You're one of the few.
Yes.
I have trouble with it myself at times.
So, what have you been up to?
Oh, man, so much.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to talk about this.
Uh-oh, he has an agenda.
Yeah. Yes, I do, because I'm here to promote stuff. That's the only reason why I'm here.
Right, okay.
Last fall, we had an incident at the Hannon Playhouse.
An incident?
An incident, yes.
Uh-oh.
Where four of us saw a ghost.
Oh, yeah.
Go up on stage. It touched a couple of kids. It ran off. And that wasn't the only incident, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
He kept interacting. And there's more than just him.
Mm-hmm.
I know I heard a little girl laughing, heard people running around upstairs. And when I'd go check, there's nobody up there, so on and so forth. You know, so at one time, I was standing near the speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this word in the play that I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Camp Pleasantries. So anyway, I'm standing near the speaker, and I hear this s'mores out of the speaker. Well, that word.
S'mores?
S'mores, yes. Now, I looked up on the stage, and nobody had heard it except me. So
wow.
I didn't talk about that for a while, but that was funny. But he's manipulated the lights during a live performance.
Ooh.
Last year. He initiated a sound effect, which wasn't supposed to go off, and looked up at the booth, and they're shrugging their shoulders, looking at me, going, I don't know. We didn't touch anything.
Wow.
He's manipulated the lights. I think I might have mentioned that. But anyway, even during performances, they could hear him laughing in the next dressing room over.
That's creepy.
And a couple of the kids won't come back because of that.
Oh, man.
It's kind of sad.
How old is the theater?
What?
How old is
the
theater?
Oh, it was They started constructing it in 1911.
Wow.
So and this is an interesting thing. Recently, they remodeled the lobby.
Uh-huh.
A guy did, and he found a time capsule in the wall.
Oh.
And what it was an old baseball bat.
Yeah.
And it had the guy's name on it, Buddy Ryan. Not the football coach, but
yeah.
This baseball player. And he ended up managing up until the early 60s. But that was 1911 when he played for Portland in the minors.
Yeah.
Next year he played with Ty Cobb in Detroit, 1912.
Wow.
We looked it up. Isn't that cool?
That's very cool.
Yeah. And obviously he was a big guy because it's a heavy bat.
Yeah.
And it was cracked. So he's probably a power hitter of some sort.
Yeah.
I don't even know if they had such a thing back then. But anyway. Yeah, so anyway. Yeah.
Theaters are favorite place for spirits to hang out.
They seem to be, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, especially the very old theaters tend to have a lot of ghosts.
Well, we've
spirits,
had a couple ghost hunter groups come in.
Yeah.
And the last one that came in, they got all kinds of answers. So that's why they know somewhat, like they say, there's eight spirits there.
Yeah.
And I think I knew one of them when she was alive.
Oh, yeah.
And I put all of these in my play, by the way, but I took wild artistic liberties with the play. It's really not about the playhouse so much.
Right.
It's just a melodrama. You know, you got Mr. Evil and then you got your heroine.
But having this ghost experience kind of fueled this writing of the play?
It sure did.
Okay.
And in fact, a lot of these stories I integrated into the play.
Mm-hmm.
So they talk about these incidents, but none of these happen in the story itself.
Okay.
Necessarily. I guess someone gets touched
yeah.
by a ghost. But yeah, and even last Monday during rehearsal, one of the girls got touched. During rehearsal,
mm-hmm.
she jumped and said, "Oh, something touched me," and I knew immediately that she was a sensitive.
Yeah,
I said that. Are you a sensitive? And she said, "Yes." I've
now, what is a sensitive?
Well, people that can see, hear, communicate with spirits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone on that level.
Okay.
They have their pituitary gland or pineal gland is working really good for them.
Where's that located, that gland?
It's kind of in the middle of your brain, really.
Oh, okay.
But they sort of point to here for the third eye.
Oh, third eye, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So so that's ongoing, and that's going to go on. It's going to straddle the two weekends of Halloween for all those out there that are interested in coming and seeing a live show. And believe me, stuff could happen. It could happen during the show. I
would be interesting to hear if anything does.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I go there alone all the time, and nothing ever happens when I'm there. Maybe once in a while, but not much, you know. But it's whenever you get someone sensitive like that in there, then all of a sudden stuff starts happening. They act as a catalyst for that stuff. Okay, so that's one thing I wanted to talk about. But, you know, me. I have a relationship with the forest people out there.
Mm-hmm. How's that been going?
Well, every year I wonder what they're going to teach me. And this year it kind of just went way off the deep end. I mean, in a direction I never expected. Now, over years, I kept receiving this number. And I wondered what that number meant. And I met this guy named Joe, and you know him.
Mm-hmm.
He owns the Montana Vortex. And when I met him, I suddenly felt compelled. I got to go to that vortex. I got to check that vortex out. So I went there last June, and they hosted me. And we went out at night. And boy, was that something.
Wow.
Doors opening and closing by themselves. Voices, unattached shadows. Paralleling us as we walked through his property.
Yeah.
You know, we could see him. Also, a Bigfoot scream from across the highway, which was kind of cool, too.
Wow.
Now, originally he got into this through Bigfoot.
Yeah.
You know, they take you to this metaphysical stuff, and then you want to figure it out. And so he bought that vortex to try to figure it out. about 3 months ago, he had a Bigfoot run right through his commercial property when it was full of tourists.
Wow.
Broad daylight.
That's got to be quite the experience.
Yeah.
And they all saw him.
Yeah.
Wow.
But he says it happens periodically there, you know, that they'll come through. And I think they do that to pick up power from the vortex itself.
Could be.
I believe so. I took that trip. That was very interesting. And before I left, he handed me this pamphlet. And this pamphlet said 216. And I immediately realized that relates to my number I was given, 327.
Yeah.
If you add one digit to each of those digits, you get 327. Of course, I got a big chill. It had been 3.5 years since I'd seen that number. Once I started paying attention to it, they didn't show it to me anymore until I went to the vortex. They knew I was going to go to the vortex. They guided me. So anyway, I started studying vortex math, and sure enough, 327 weaves right into the vortex math, creates Fibonacci numbers, and so on and so forth. And then I took a map out, and just out of curiosity, you know, I'm checking everything out. I mean, I spent days trying everything, and of course, most of it didn't work. You know, it just was nothing, you know, but I found some that did. And I took a map out, and I drew a straight line from the Montana vortex to this other vortex that I was guided to by my forest friends recently.
Yeah.
And when I showed up there, 3:30 in the afternoon, they all started whooping. They sounded happy.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, yeah, I found your spot. I didn't have any clue that it was a vortex yet until I started looking around and seeing all these bendy trees, some even growing around each other, you know. And I thought, oh, my goodness, this is the kind of stuff I saw at the Montana vortex.
Yeah.
And then I looked at that, the map. I drew a straight line to my house. And I hate to reveal too much, but there's a certain distance from my house to this vortex. And then there's a certain distance from that vortex to another vortex, same distance. And then the angle, if you add those two distances up, creates that angle from that straight line from the Montana vortex to that vortex down to my house.
Yeah.
Then you add my number to that angle, and you get the number of miles from the Montana vortex to that vortex. So there's all these things weaving together. I even found the number in the vortex math, you know, the distance from my house to the vortex. All of it weaved together in an amazing way that can't possibly be a coincidence. There's just too many factors there, you know. It would be a one in a zillion.
Yeah.
So
some people think that the vortexes are gateways to other dimensions. Have you ever experienced anything like that?
Okay, yeah. Yeah, they showed me something.
Oh, okay.
They wanted me to pay attention to this guy named this mega genius. His name is Nick Nelson. And I'm, you know, that's my opinion. I think he's a mega genius because I read his book. I'm going through it twice. I'm going to read it three times. It's kind of technical. You know, there's a lot of cool stories in there, but the math itself is a little hard to understand, you know, how vortexes work, but he's figured this all out.
Yeah.
And he even has somewhat of a schedule, when these portals will show up. Well, I think they gave me that number to add to this knowledge. They chose him. He had an incident way back in 1974 where he was driving to Reno and a friend was with him, and they just left a restaurant, full bellies. And after the rest, they get on the road and he checked his watch, and next thing he knows, they're 100 miles down the road. And he's trying to figure, how'd that happen? And he looks at his buddy and they're discussing it. Do you remember passing? Because they knew the road well. They, you know, used to do this a lot going to Reno. And he says, do you remember passing such and such? Do you remember passing? No. Looked at his watch. Only 3 minutes had gone by. And they were both starving. They wanted to go eat immediately because they were so hungry.
Yeah.
What happened there? Well, okay, that's when they chose him, I think. Or they probably chose him before that. But that was in 74.
Yeah.
Joe started having things happen. I had my first encounter, but I didn't know what it was, 35 years ago. So, and then there's a couple others that I know of. All of us were chosen, I think, for this. And they're revealing this information slowly but surely. And it has to do, I believe, with vortexes and portals. They're showing us how they get around, I believe.
Yeah.
From here to there.
That's. I know that there's a whole group of people that have this thought that these are portals, that they're a way to transport people or beings,
yes,
or spirits,
yes,
from one place to another.
Yes. So, here's what happened to me. I went down to Cottage Grove to visit a couple of my friends who have a podcast down there, paranormal podcast.
Yeah.
You know, and when I was driving away after their podcast, I decided I was going to drive to Florence. I'm out in the middle of nowhere. I just followed the sun because there's no signs over there or anything. I don't have a GPS. You know, I'm still living in the 20th century. And I come around this corner, and I'd had a desire about a week before that when I was in Montana because of my buddy. He's a wildlife expert, and he posted this picture of a bear and her cubs, and I had the desire to see a bear. And this is the way it always starts.
Yeah.
They show me a bear. I come around a corner, there's a bear. It's a yearling. And it's running across the road. And before it got across the road, it disappears. Poof.
Wow.
I stopped, and I actually started looking around for the bear. Because I couldn't figure out where it went. There was no place for it to hide.
Yeah.
You know, there was just a little scrabble grass in the ditch there. And a slope with a few limbs and no place for a bear to hide. And then I started thinking about that and Nick Nelson's book. And I looked on his charts, and he had charted regional vortexes. And that happened right on event horizon, is what I call it. He
yeah.
calls it a demarcation line. But I would call it an event horizon, where stuff happens.
Right.
And it was right there. So they were showing me that's where stuff happens. They didn't. I don't know how they did it, but I know why they picked that spot.
Yeah.
And of course, I know why they did it for me, because they wanted me to know that you got to take that book seriously. That guy knows what he's talking about. That's my opinion, of course. But you know, I've been going through this stuff for a long time, and piece by piece, we're going forward yeah. with this stuff.
Well, clearly, there's a message in that book for you.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. That's why I'm plan on reading it three times.
Yeah.
One and a half times through it now.
I've always taught that if you want to get the messages, that there's a message in everything. If you take a book and you basically just let it fall open to a certain page and you read that page, there's a message on that page for
uh-huh.
you. You know, obviously if you do it over and over, you know, 100 times.
Sure.
You know, the message.
Oh, you got to have.
Always, but
you got to be in the right mood.
Yeah, when you feel it, when you feel that you need a message or there's a special book that talks to you,
mm-hmm.
just let it fall open and see what's on that page.
Yeah. You know, like I was saying before we started to be on air here, 7 years ago, I was a total skeptic about all this stuff.
Yeah.
But piece by piece, when they show you this stuff, especially when you see a bear disappear, you know, that kind of gets your attention. Another strange thing that happened on that trip, the next day, I stopped at the Oregon State Aquarium.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd read that octopi are telepathic. So I went to the tank of the octopus that was in there, and it was a female octopus, and it was a new one, and it was out. And so there was a big crowd around it. You know, around the window, the viewing window. Even the volunteers were crowding up front because they don't get to see the octopus very, very frequently.
Yeah.
Usually hides in its little den. And so I kind of squeezed myself to the corner of the window, and I sent it a message in my head. I said, if you can hear me, come to the window. Immediately it came and gave me eye contact. I told everybody there, and they all laughed. Oh, well, you know, what can you do? But anyway, so in my opinion, octopi are telepathic.
Yeah, and some people would say that's coincidental. But,
sure.
You know, I've seen it happen over and over and over.
Exactly.
Where someone thinks something and it happens.
Yeah.
And it's not something radical that happens. It's,
right.
You know, it's not like you run two cars into each other.
Yes.
But it's something subtle.
Yeah.
And I truly believe that. I've done it myself numerous times.
Mm-hmm.
Where I've just thought, you know, that maybe something or someone should behave or do something a little differently. And I put that thought out there, and sure enough, it happens.
Oh, yes. Intent.
Yes.
Intent is everything. I know, and I've been utilizing that a lot lately.
Yeah.
You know, I never thought it had any power before, but I actually pray now and do things that I never would have thought of doing
yeah.
7 years ago. And in fact, that incident, I would have considered it maybe coincidental 7 years ago, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, isn't that a coincidence?
Yeah.
But not anymore.
It's
There's
a strange
too many
world
things.
We live in.
It
it's
certainly
a very strange
is.
World.
Oh my goodness! I encountered so many things that are strange, you know,
yeah.
over the course of a year. Anymore, it happens all the time. Just like I said, Monday was my last incident.
Yeah.
Here's another interesting one, which has to do with the Playhouse. I was opening it up one night for rehearsal, and there was a crow up really close to me. On a line, you know, and I thought, wow, you know, he's really calm and settled and not worried about me at all, even though, like, you know, he's right there. So I talked to him after I opened the door.
Yeah.
I turned around and I said, so how you doing? You doing all right? You know, and I started walking into the playhouse, and I heard this sentence, and it sounded like a very strange cartoonish voice from inside of a barrel. And I thought it came from inside the playhouse, even though my first impression was it was outside.
Yeah.
So I rushed into the playhouse and said, what'd you say? Because I thought it was, you know, our friendly ghost Oscar
yeah.
that said something to me. It wasn't until later I realized, oh my gosh, that might have been the crow that talked to me. Because it sounded like it was outside, the way it sounded
yeah.
was so weird that it didn't strike me until later. And so I posted that on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
My sister had one say hello to her in Lacelle.
Wow.
A bunch of other people were posting, oh, yeah, there's one that talks in Monroe. You know, really crazy. I never, wow, crows talk, I guess. But this one said a whole sentence.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it said, but it was like a 4 or 5 word sentence. And that's why I asked it to repeat it. I just caught a little bit of it. There was an ing word in the middle, like I'm watching you, or I'm looking out for you, or something like that. Some weird thing like that. So that's interesting.
It is. It is. You know, throughout history, crows have kind of been special. And people have written about them, I think that sense that they, you know, that they're somewhat otherworldly has always been there.
Well, certain people say that that Bigfoot can use crows and hawks, kind of like we use drones.
Yeah,
they can see through their eyes, so they'll send them somewhere to take a look, and I experience them all the time. You know, when I go out there in
yeah.
the middle of nowhere and they're not around, there's usually crows around.
Yeah.
But I did notice that vortex, that they weren't coming into the vortex.
Really?
They were staying outside the perimeter of that vortex. I don't know if that'll hold true. I've only been able to visit that vortex twice.
Well, there's a lot
I've been
of
so
energy
busy.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. Horses will not go into a vortex.
Yeah.
They'll absolutely avoid it. This is another strange thing about those vortexes. That vortex up in Montana, there's three of them. And they're aligned the same way as Orion's Belt is.
Yeah.
And so are the pyramids. as of 12,500 years ago. That's how they were aligned.
Yeah.
Orion's Belt. If you look at a map of all the vortexes, the commercial vortexes on the West Coast, you got three of them, one in Oregon and two in California, and then you got the Montana one, then you got one in South Dakota. They look like the bottom half of Orion's constellation.
Huh.
Is that weird or what?
That's very strange. Yeah.
Yes. So, to me, that tells me that there was a creator of some sort. Now, Nick Nelson says it might be that it was just the monumental construction of the pyramid that could have created those vortexes in that. But I'm thinking there's someone involved.
There are patterns in the universe, especially with energy.
Sure.
And a vortex is essentially it's either a producer of energy or an attractor of energy.
Yeah.
But there are patterns that take place in nature and in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And that may just be part of it.
We're essentially in a matrix of sorts.
So a lot of people would say this is kind of crazy talk, you know?
I know.
If you think about it, you know, we have so many distractions in our world today that it's hard for us to concentrate. It's hard for us to be connected to the universe and to the energy of the universe.
Nature.
And to nature, which is a part of that energy, that overpowering, overseeing energy. When we can let go, for some people it's easier than for others, when we can let go of all the distractions and we can kind of be in tune with nature, we suddenly see so much more.
Oh, yeah.
And if we can carry that with us to other parts of our life, again, we see so much more than we've ever seen before.
It helps.
We experience more.
It helps.
Yeah, we can start...
Calms you down, too.
Having conversations with nature. We can have conversations with...
each other.
and with each other. And we can share that energy, and the energy drives us. We were just talking off the air about... I had some heart surgery a while ago.
Yeah.
And when I go through these experiences of dying and my heart stopping and things like that, I'm immediately taken to that spiritual place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this last time I didn't have an out-of-body experience, but I'm always in contact with that spirit.
Yeah.
And
they're always around.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, mine will show up in a photo.
And it talks to us. It can guide us. It can say, you know, whether or not we're supposed to keep going in this life or, you know, or let it go. And it can help us to see other creatures and beings and spirits and Bigfoot and things that, you know, others don't see.
That's right. A lot of it's target recognition,
right.
as Joe Hauser tells me, you know, the wildlife expert.
Yeah.
Because once you got that target recognition, then you can see it a lot easier, and I know that.
Yeah.
My dad, I used to walk, you know, my dad grew up in logging camps and spent a lot of time out in the woods, you know. And I was always amazed when we'd be out there somewhere and he'd spot something and I couldn't even see it, you know. Oh, see that deer? No, I don't see that deer. Where is it? You know, it'd take me 5 minutes to spot the deer.
Right.
Now I'm that way because I spend so much time out there.
Right. You see it immediately.
I can see a squirrel before it sees me, you know.
Well, it's Strange Harbor where we talk about the weird, and coming up, more with Russell Wiedela.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and Johnny, Billy, and Russell here, and you may have seen the headline, read the headline, how astronomers may have found Spock's home planet of Vulcan.
Tell us.
Back in 91, Gene Roddenberry and three astronomers wrote to Sky and Telescope magazine about where Vulcan might be located. They stated a preference for a star called 40 Eridani as being Vulcan's sun. Now astronomers have discovered that there's actually at least one planet orbiting that star. Huh. It's 8 times the mass of Earth, although they say it's likely too hot to support Spock's family or any other life.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You know, we think that these people that write these fictional stories like Star Trek and Star Wars, that they just make it all up. But most of it is pretty well researched, so that there is some basis in fact.
That's right.
And most of what they tell is a story.
Close Encounters of a Third Kind was based on
an actual event.
Yeah, actual events. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, when we watch this stuff, we just think, oh, well, that's just some made up story. But oftentimes there's some reality. There's some actuality that's woven into the story.
Yep.
So these people do a lot of research. They're very smart.
And that reminds me, I saw a couple UFOs this summer.
Oh, tell us about it.
Well, about 2 months ago, I'm laying on my deck, on my zero gravity chair, looking straight up at Cygnus.
Yeah.
And just relaxing. And I started seeing these flashes, really bright flashes, with, you know, these like these rays that came out from them.
Yeah.
And the first one was really bright, and then the next one was not so bright, and then the third one was kind of dim and sort of bluish, and it almost looked like it was moving away, you know, from Earth, like it was flashing a strobe.
Yeah.
And was moving away from Earth. And then about 5 minutes later, I saw it in another location near the handle, well, be near the North Pole. Actually, Polaris, that star. And the next day, because my neighbors showed up while I was watching this, I talked to them because they were standing outside talking for a while. I could hear them, you know.
Yeah.
So I went to talk to them the next day to see if they saw what I saw. Nope, they were watching two other UFOs on the other side of the tree line from me where I couldn't see them, orange orbs moving around. And they said they moved around and then just disappeared.
Wow.
And then, about 2 weeks ago, I'm doing the same thing. It was a hot night. So I'm laying out on my deck on my zero-gravity chair, and there they are again. See the same thing. Well, it turns out I reported that on one of my closed groups, you know, UFO closed group. And my friend who lives in Port Orchard saw the same thing. In the same area.
Wow.
So whatever it was way out there. It had to be, you know, because she saw it in the same area of the constellations.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was moving around and randomly, not in a straight line, these flashes. What was that?
Well, it's interesting, you know, and sometimes when we see these things, we think, oh, well, we're the only one that saw it.
Yeah.
I mentioned a couple of months ago, I mentioned seeing some orbs in Ocean Shores.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I'm the only one that saw them.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. So I talked a little bit about it. And several people contacted us on our email and said that they saw the same thing. So if we hear back from two or three people that have seen the same thing, there's probably 24 that saw it.
For sure.
Who just don't want to talk about it.
Yes.
Or just think that, you know, they're not important enough to speak
That's
about
right.
it. If two or three people that listen to our show, the entire audience, saw it, then think of how many people must have seen this.
I'm convinced it's about 30-1.
Yeah, probably.
Because talking to people, in fact, just yesterday, I was meeting with my light tech that's going to set up the lights for my play, and he said that recently he saw something run across the road where I've got friends. And he says, I don't know what that was, but it was running on two legs, you know, like big. Wow. And I went, oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Did he report it? No. Is he going to report it? No. I would say one out of every 30 that I talk to who have seen one have reported it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of visuals out there happening that people don't report.
I think there are, and I think there's a lot of not just visual things, but spiritual things that people don't report. It took me 20 years to talk publicly about my near-death experience.
Yeah.
But once I did, I found that there were a lot of other people that talked about it.
Yeah.
And when I talked about it, I worked as a therapist in the VA system for 20 years. And when I talked about it with some of the patients in the hospital, they would tell me, oh, yeah, I have an experience like that. But they probably never would have talked about it if I hadn't talked about my experience.
That's right. They need
same thing out in public.
Sure.
You know, and I've been fortunate enough that I've appeared on lots of TV shows and radio shows, so I've been able to get out and talk publicly about this.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that people always contact me and say, you know, I've had a similar experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important that we talk about these because I think
for sure
far more people are having these experiences that are seeing Bigfoot or seeing spirits or being in touch with UFOs than we ever imagined.
Yes. It's way beyond what I imagined for sure.
Right.
Because, you know, I didn't used to talk to people about this stuff.
Right.
Had no clue that a lot of my friends had already witnessed these things and had interactions, you know, of some sort with either UFOs or Bigfoot or, you know, spirits. That's one of the big surprises that have happened, you know, during this process.
Well, and people are afraid of being labeled, you know. In our society, we have a tendency to label people.
Yeah.
And,
you
know, I've been talking about this stuff for, you know, 30 some years now, and I don't, you know, if somebody wants to put a label on me or call me crazy or they're welcome to do it because you know, I know it's real.
Yeah.
I've experienced it, I've seen it, and that's all it takes for me. I don't have to validate that with someone else's approval.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I gotta write a book about this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I told them, I promised them, because they've done so much for me, and I'm talking about my forest friends.
Yeah.
Some of it's really whack. They've helped me with my health, for instance.
Yeah.
Things like that. And so I told them, you know, hey, if I can do anything for you, I will, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's going to take some courage to write this book, because it's going to be, I'm certainly going to receive a lot of flack for it in certain groups. But, you know, I'm going to do it. I got to do it. But, you know, I have a theory about why we don't believe these things. If you go to any indigenous tribe, they believe in them.
Yes.
Because they experience them, they see them. We, like you said, we got separated from nature. But there's another element to that, too. And I'm not dissing Christianity or Islam or any religion.
Right.
I'm dissing the people behind the pulpit because there are people that wanted power. And they wanted all the power. And if you're pagan and you're visiting spirits, we're going to burn you because I don't want that knowledge out there.
Yeah,
I think they tamp down on that knowledge.
They do. The church has poo-pooed that idea of spirits.
I mean,
who went after the witches?
And they should be embracing it.
It was the church that went after the witches. You know, the Spanish Inquisition.
Oh, yeah.
If you didn't believe what they believed, they hung you or killed you or burned
you. That's right.
I mean, it was violence.
Mm-hmm.
And
St. Patrick, he ran the snakes out of Ireland.
Yeah.
The snakes were pagans.
Uh-huh.
That was just what they called them.
Yeah. And so we have to understand that there are people, there are human beings that want power and control.
Mm-hmm.
And when you challenge their ideology.
Yeah.
It puts them on the defensive.
That's
and
right.
then they try to discredit
That's
you.
Right. That's right. I think, personally, I think everybody should read those religious books on their own. And do not listen to the guy behind the pulpit, because he's been taught by the guy that taught him.
Well, not everybody's that way.
Not everybody. I shouldn't say everybody.
Yeah, I know some preachers who are very open.
Oh, sure.
I've been in touch with religious people that have read my book and are very open to talking about these kind of things.
Yes. No. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
There are a lot of them. There's not enough of them.
That's right. So what happens is we see the worst of the worst because
yes. they're the ones that are the loudest.
Right, and they're the ones that stand out, and they're the ones that get all the attention.
Yeah.
But, I believe that with the proper leadership and guidance, religion can be a very powerful thing. Prayer. I'm not a religious person, but I believe that prayer is extraordinarily powerful.
Definitely.
And
I believe in it now, too.
I've seen the effects that it can have on people.
Mm-hmm.
And so if...
What
if
we're talking about are the same powers.
Exactly.
You can put any label on it you want.
Yeah.
But don't pretend you know it.
Yeah.
Well, we don't understand
when, it. When people come together in church and they have... They basically coalesce their thoughts.
Yes. Come to an agreement.
It's a concentration of energy, and if it's directed in the right place, it can do tremendous things.
Yes, exactly.
But when it gets,
I believe that for sure.
Yeah, when it gets convoluted and it gets to the point where they can't focus that energy,
there's a lot of negative energy being spread too.
Then it doesn't go anywhere.
That.
Yeah,
that's unfortunate.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They've done tests where just before 9/11,
right.
for instance, they got these instruments that peaked, that pick up people's vibrations. I don't know how they work. But, they realized that people, even subconsciously, had picked up on this event.
Yeah.
It was going to happen prior to the event.
Well, we have electrical energy. I mean, it's measurable.
Yes. Yeah.
And some people have more energy than others.
That's right. We're all, essentially, we're all vortexes. We all are, we have our own electromagnetic energy.
Interesting you use that word essential, because I was told by an energy healer once that energy we have is called essential energy.
Oh.
And he believed that, and he was a medical doctor. In fact, he had been a flight surgeon in the Air Force for 25 years. And he left there because they wouldn't let him practice his methods of healing,
right.
that energy healing.
Hmm.
But he was very, very effective, very effective.
Sure. Well, this mega genius I was talking about, that guy could be a millionaire.
Yeah.
He's actually, people have to believe in what he has to show them first. But, he's figured out that there is something to healing with magnets.
Right.
But you have to have them aligned properly and stuff.
Right.
And he's figured all that out, And he says these ones you buy, commercially, they just throw them on there randomly. And he says sometimes they'll be in the right configuration that they'll help you.
Right.
But most of the time they probably aren't. Most of the time they won't do anything, but sometimes they'll do negative energy too.
Right.
And they can affect you negatively. So, yeah, isn't that fascinating that this world is a lot more layered than people realize?
And oh, yeah.
They're missing so much.
They are.
Because this is what's important.
It is. It is. Money's not important. Money
no.
is, money, you have to have some money because you have to live.
Sure.
But being rich is...
It's an empty pursuit.
Some of the most unhappy people I know are wealthy people.
Yeah.
It's all about the money, and they're missing out on so much of life.
That's right.
And I've seen this with people in, the end stages of their life who have made a lot of money and worked really hard.
That's right.
And they have so many regrets because They didn't live life to the fullest. They didn't open their heart and their soul to everything that's going around
them. I'm so happy now.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I mean,
I had to sell my airplane because I couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
I don't miss it at all, really.
No. It's, now I lost my train, but...
Do you have anything...
Money.
Money. Added something.
Yeah,
thank you.
Money. Money is not... It's not the be-all and end-all, and, you know, we can live a fine life without much money. You need a little bit. I mean, you know, being dirt poor is not fun, and it's also very distracting.
Yeah.
You know, and being very wealthy is... very distracting.
Oh, for sure.
So, you know, if you can find a place in the middle, which is basically, you know, 98% of the people.
I would like to recommend that everybody simplify their life.
Right.
You know, I got rid of that airplane. I got rid of some other headaches, you know.
Yeah.
I used to have a place up in Canada where I went skiing, you know.
Uh-huh.
Got rid of that. All these complications I got rid of. Now my life is... simplified.
Yes.
Although, you know, I've been working hard on this musical thing, but that's a real passion for me, and having fun doing it. But
when is the musical going to take place?
It's
going to
straddle the weekends of Halloween.
So that's right.
The Friday, Saturday, Sunday before, and the Friday, Saturday, Sunday after. The matinees are on Sunday, the other performances will be at 7:30.
And where at again?
It's at the Hannon Playhouse on 8th Street. And Raymond Washington. Be there.
Beautiful downtown Raymond.
Is there any information, like on Facebook or anywhere I could find more information on the progress of the play?
Actually, I haven't posted anything, but a little bit. But, I'm going to post something on there. They can look up Hannon Playhouse or Willapa Players. Willapa Players would be a better idea, I guess. And thank you very much for that, sir.
We'll send you a bill.
In when I get it licensed, and you can play some for people. It's been the most enormous project I've ever taken on in my life.
Yeah,
because I've had to dedicate 24/7 to it, pretty much, except for that 6 weeks.
Yeah,
that I kind of took off, you know, for. Pursuing this other stuff that I had to find out about. Yeah, that was
like going to the Vortex?
Yeah.
Did you do that thing to where you have the border and one tall person and a short person and one, the tall person would be
Joe
shorter?
Hauser. And I got some pictures. I got them with me. But yeah, Joe
What's
Hauser
that did, like?
Well, you don't feel anything, but it's weird to look almost Joe in the eye, switch places on a board that you can put a level on and shows you that it's level, and suddenly he's towering above me.
Wow.
You know? And I got my suspicions that I know what's happening there. And this is just another theory. I haven't actually ran it by Joe or any of these people yet, but I was...
So this is a Strange Harbor exclusive?
It is. I just came up with it a couple days ago because I was thinking about, you know, what's happening there.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of squeezing space itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe when you go through these portals, you get squeezed down completely, and that's how space squeezes down. Instead of folding space... to shorten the length from here to there, maybe it squeezes down and then expands as you go through the portal on the other side.
Yeah.
It's just a thought.
That's a good thought, though.
Well, that explains why people are, you know, get smaller.
Yeah.
You can walk that board. I did it a couple times because it's fun. You know, you get you level your eyes on something on the other side, and then you walk towards it, and your eyes go, next thing you know, you're looking up.
And this place is called the Montana Vortex, right?
Yeah. It's in,
and people can look it up online. You can go visit there. They have tours, and there's a... places you can stay out there.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So. It's about 15 miles outside of Glacier National Park.
Yeah,
and I'd really highly recommend it. There's one down in Oregon too, in Gold Hill, right on I-5, right off of I-5. The one up in Montana is off of Highway 2. Both of them are worthy to go to.
Yeah.
I went to my first one, Oregon, because my great nephews wanted to go there. They drugged me to that place, and I was thinking it was all hokey. You know, my skeptic, my old skeptic self, you know. And then I saw that demonstration on the board, and I went, what is going on?
Well, there are a lot of vortexes down in the Southwest. There's quite a number of them as well. When I was much younger, summer I would go to Sedona. And this is when Sedona was nothing more than
I've heard about that.
Body stop down for there. The tourist buses.
Yes.
Going from Phoenix to Flagstaff.
Yeah.
And the vortexes were amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Oak Creek Canyon was just alive with energy.
Mm.
And what's happened is it's built up and it's grown up. And
that's too bad.
Some of that energy has dissipated.
Yeah.
You know, one of the problems is that human beings tend to suck the life out of everything.
They do. They do. You know, the reason why this vortex is up there where they led me to, I believe, and this is just my, you know, my theory, but it's in a canyon surrounded by basalt.
Uh-huh.
And basalt is slightly magnetic. So I'm thinking, wow, you know, it in the middle, basalt cliffs on both sides, it's sort of like in the middle of the magnet.
Yeah.
Which is where the vortex would form. So, anyway, that's just
sure
an outside theory on that. But
and I think if you look at where all the vortexes are, you probably would find that there's a lot of iron in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of heavy minerals around, because they do. They attract energy.
Yeah. Up there, what you have is... what was it? Oh, geez. They were going to mine it during World War II, and they found out didn't have enough of it.
Yeah.
There was a couple minerals that they needed for. I can't remember. But, yeah. It had
to make
do
atomic bombs, probably.
Maybe. I don't know what they did with it. Yeah. Oh, I can't think of those two elements that they mined up there. But anyway. Yeah. Both of them are, you know, those kind of elements that would be highly conductive. I think one of them might have been copper.
Copper, yeah.
Yeah.
It's very
conductive. And then the other one was some other off element,
yeah,
like zinc
or something.
Or oh, that was it. It was manganese.
Manganese. Okay.
Manganese and copper.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, hey, thanks. Yeah, so those things are up there, highly conductive. Obviously, there's a lot of electromagnetism going on in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, it all fits together.
It does.
My friend Bill.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. Russell, thanks for hanging out today, man.
Hey,
thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
If you have any questions, comments, if you want to yell at Bill about his New Age TUI, log on to strangeharbor.net.
And stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.